hours yet.
Blog Talk Radio.
There you go.
Good evening and welcome to Comic-Con Stars. This is Dr. John. I am so glad to be with everybody tonight. We got our boys. First of all, welcome to Papa Stro, the Maestro of Wrestling. Thanks for being here with us tonight.
Thank you for having me.
We're glad to be here with you. And this weekend, you and I will be, along with Cody, Carolina Caricatures, we will be at the Tidewater Comic-Con in Virginia Beach, Virginia. It's going to be a blast, and thanks for being with us. And we're as I was telling you right before the show, haven't got to hang out with you in 2 weeks, so we're going to have a blast.
Yeah, it should be a great time. Looking forward to seeing everyone in the Virginia Beach area. It's been a while, so all those talented people in one place for the weekend. It's going to be a good time.
Exactly, and so thanks for being with us. And then, of course, our author. Well, one of the two authors. I'm a little bit of an author now, but Dave Atwell. Dave, glad to have you here with us. How are you doing tonight?
I am doing fantastic. I hope everybody else is doing real good. Speaking on Tidewater, I encourage you gentlemen, along with anybody going that way, to stop in and see a gentleman by the name of Drew Moss. And he's a good friend of mine, comic book artist. This guy is probably one of the most humble and fantastic and talented guys you're going to meet in the comic industry. And sad I'm not going to make it up there, because I'm telling you, every time I get a chance to go up there and see him and cigar bomb him and everything, he's just one of those good old guys that you like to run up on the show. So, matter of fact, I joke quite often how the house is decorated by his work. So you can call it Interiors by Drew. But great guy, great talent. So Drew Moss is the name. If you're up there in Tidewater, drop in and see the young man. Great guy.
We will do that. Papa Stro, you and I, we'll go accost him, punch him out, and tell him how cool he is, right?
Oh, yeah. Looking forward to seeing him out there. Yeah, I mean, it's amazing the authors and artists that come to these Comic-Cons and the talent they bring. It's really incredible.
It really is. And talk about talent tonight. First of all, Laurette Love, producer from Hollywood, said that she couldn't be with us tonight. She'll be with us next week. She is coming to the Lizard Man Festival in Bishopville to do some interviews and talk to everyone and start putting together a second movie on the Great Lizard Man. Of course, we had the producer of the Monster Escape, or Reggie Fullwood. He was with us a couple weeks ago. He will actually be with us at the Lizard Man Festival. Looking forward to having Reggie with us. He's a super guy. Laurette will be with us next week, and she will be at the Lizard Man Festival. Tell you what, the world is coming to Lizard Man in Bishopville. It's going to be great. So what happened is whenever we have someone who can't be with us, I have a go-to guy. He's a very good friend, and we all know him. It's Anthony Dowling. He's the executive director of Eno River Media. And I said, Anthony, we've had a wonderful guest say that they cannot be with us tonight, and we need somebody good. And the first thing he said was, John, you were on the board of directors meeting last night, and Bill Pacer was there. I said, oh, my God, do you think Bill Pacer would come on tonight? He said, I can give him a call. And we called him, and this fine, fine gentleman who's a member of the board of directors of Eno River Media. He's an accomplished actor, director, producer, writer. He's done so much. He's truly an A-lister for North Carolina Film and Entertainment. Bill, thank you for being with us tonight.
Oh, my pleasure.
Good to have you on.
That was a good enough. I hope that was a good enough
introduction. Well, I think you just said how wonderful I am. I don't need to say how wonderful I am. You've already said how wonderful I am, so.
You are awesome. Welcome to the show.
But we're not done yet. We got to talk to you and have fun and let everybody know who Bill Pacer is. So here's what I know. Last night we were talking, and Bill is an actor, I believe, first and foremost. Right, Bill?
Yes.
At least right now.
That's my first calling is acting and then writing.
And you are legendary for doing Ben Franklin.
Well, the thing is, I know so many Franklin impersonators, and that's all they do is impersonating. They don't really know the history. They're caricatures rather than characters. And my belief is when I'm doing Ben Franklin, I have become Ben Franklin, and I have to go back to the era of Ben Franklin. I'm not Ben Franklin transported by some weird signal to 2018. I'm Ben Franklin in 1790. So when I do my shows, my performances, I do talk back and have them ask questions, but as Ben Franklin in 1790. So if somebody says, "What do you think about the president?" I go, "George Washington's a good man." No, our president. Yeah, George Washington's our president. Yeah. No, Donald who? So I answer questions. I mean, and then sometimes we'll just say, okay, answer the question. How would Ben Franklin view it now? But I try to maintain that Franklin is 1790. And I talk about the thing people don't know about. For example, that Ben Franklin actually has two birthdays.
Mm-hmm.
He was born on January 5th, 1705. But we celebrate January 17th, 1706. And I explained how he has two birthdays.
Uh-huh.
Well, actually, he almost had three birthdays. He was born January 6th, 1705. And the thing, it was a Sunday. So his father quickly brought him to the church for baptism. And the thing is, Sunday. And at that time, the town religious clerics and all that felt that you were born on the same day of the week as you were conceived. And Franklin's father did not want anybody to think that he was doing that on a Sunday. So he lied and tried to say, "Oh, he was born yesterday." No, your son was not born yesterday. He was born today. So then it talked about the change of the calendar. Yes, he doing that on a Sunday.
Mm-hmm.
Whatever that is, we can't do it on Sunday, right?
On Sunday.
It's all about the Benjamin. It's all about the Benjamin.
Yes. Yes. I mean, the thing was with Franklin, he stopped going to school when he was 10 years old.
Oh, wow.
And, yeah. I mean, he spent, when he came into Philadelphia, at the age of 17, he had less than a farthing in his pocket.
Wow!
And
so he was
at the age of 42.
He was the original Ferris Bueller.
Really? At the age of 42, he retired, the richest self-made man in the world.
Okay.
You know, he wasn't born wealthy. He earned everything he got, and then he spent the second 4 years of his life.
Yes.
Yeah.
He earned it.
Yes. Yeah. The old-fashioned way. Earned it. Yeah. So
yes.
Who John Houston was. Yeah. So he's a fascinating character. I mean, I use his books. I use I use newspaper articles from the time. I've got tear sheets from that era. So if he didn't say it, it was reported of saying. But for example, there's one time where he's talks about he has to make money, take a ship from Boston to New York to escape his brother's apprenticeship, and he sold his books to make the money. But then I had another situation to worry about. I was 17 years old. All that's my age for apprentices and. I knew the captain of the ship would ask why I was leaving. If I told him I was escaping an apprenticeship, I'd be jailed for violating my contract. So I had to tell a lie. Fuck you, man. Why you head to New York? Captain, sir, your lordship, sir. I got a girl in trouble. Oh, come aboard, lad. Come aboard. I dramatized what he said, but in his autobiography, he said, I told the captain that I got a woman in trouble, and the captain said, come on board. So he's a fascinating man. He's more than just the discoverer of the pleasures of electricity, and he's invented a lot of things. He was a genius.
Mm-hmm.
And a fun guy to talk about. Like one of the things is like, and these are words of the wise, gentlemen. If you want to know a man, know his woman.
Aha.
Because let's face it, your woman is proud of you.
It really is.
Your woman is proud of you for some reason and wants to say how wonderful you are. So if Franklin would use that, I mean, it didn't matter if it was a wife, mistress, or girlfriend, or all three. He would worry about the man. So when
Loretta Lynn. Yeah.
Right. So when he would meet the man later, he would say, Franklin would have all the fans that are like, how do you know Mr. Franklin? These are the things I like. These are perfect. I could just tell, sir, by the way you carry yourself, your demeanor. That's why I know this is the kind of wine you like. He didn't say he knew his wife,
mm-hmm.
or his mistress, or girlfriend, or all three. So, and the other thing, too, he treated women with respect. That's why they loved him. And he treated them as equals. He was one of the first chess players in the country. Not a very good player. But he loved playing chess. But the women knew that if he won, he won. And if he lost, he didn't lose because, I want the dainty sex to win. No, the ladies won because they were victorious. And one time, Madame Bobon was playing a game of chess. I mean, here, he played women, and men. And said, she made a move that exposed her king. And Franklin, I promptly took it. And she was aghast. She said, Monsieur Franklin. We do not take our kings like that in this country. Madam, in America, we do.
Interesting.
The sayings he comes up with, I mean, and they're very powerful. They sound quaint, but like, lost time is never found again. And gentlemen, this is one thing we've learned. We grow old too soon and wise too late.
Aha.
That's
yes.
An important phrase. It really is.
It's an important phrase because people don't think about that,
Mm-hmm.
So he said, and there's just so much about him. He saw a man's first flight.
Mm-hmm.
He saw man's first flight. Montgolfier Brothers. September 19th, 783. Two men flew
into
the blue.
Yes. That's way back in the day there.
And like, as part of my show, I say, have you ever seen a duck fly? So have I. Have you ever seen a sheep fly? You've never saw a sheep fly. Well, I have.
Mm.
Have you ever seen a rooster fly? Sort of. But I saw all three of them fly one day in a hot air balloon.
Mm.
Right.
And people would say, but what's the good of this thing? What's good of a hot air balloon? My friends, what's good of a hot air balloon? What good is a newborn baby?
Can we say Jules Verne?
Jules was a couple of years behind that, I think.
Yeah, right.
It's great to play an icon that everybody knows. And like my other, the other show I do is a solo Ebenezer Scrooge.
Oh, do tell.
Mr. Dickens' voice.
Yes. Yes. I like dark. It's cheap.
yeah. No electricity.
Yeah.
Yes. Yes. But the thing is, it's important that when I'm doing a show like that, that it's accurate, and that I'll use the internet as a start, but if I can't prove it, I don't use it.
Makes sense.
I take some liberties. I mean, for example, some of the language I changed a little bit so people could understand it. Some of the wording is a little awkward for the modern audiences. There are things I conjecture he was saying based on the information I've got. But it's all focused on, I mean, one thing I talk about, I love being quoted. I love it when people quote me, beer and wine prove God loves us and wants to be happy. I love being quoted as saying that because I never did. He never said that.
Oh, really?
Wow. What's up with that?
Here's the base here. I don't have my script in front of me right now, but it's like basically, I talk about the miracle of Cana. The Lord changed water into wine as a miracle. Yes, that was a miracle.
Mm-hmm.
But that miracle occurs every day. The rain falls from the sky. It seeps to the earth and nurtures the roots. The roots grow with trunk and vines. And from those vines, we get grapes, which we harvest and make into wine. And that, my friends, because God loves us and wants us to be happy. A whole different perspective.
Yeah. Well, I've always, I've said on here before where folks, if they were to take history, if you just take history as one of those things, it's like, Jesus, the class I got to take or something like that, you're really missing out because there's so much. And yes, we all know that, Washington led the Continental Army, and we all know that, the whole kite and the key thing for Franklin and blah, blah, blah. But if you really drill down on some of the, I won't even call it backstory because it's nothing these guys did was a backstory. But if you really stop and drill down and read some of the less known stuff about these gentlemen, sometimes you got to wonder if it was divine intervention that we won the American Revolution because some of the most brilliant minds of all time, there was stuff that Thomas Jefferson was speaking about banking you can apply to right now. And this guy was writing this stuff, 230 years ago. So, and the true blessing is, had we not won the revolution, these gentlemen, these brilliant minds, the Franklins, the Jeffersons, the Washingtons, the Adams and the Monroes and these guys, they would have been hung as common criminals and probably done worse by King George. And
King George,
they would not have enjoyed the same consequence that King George enjoyed when we run the revolution and just told them to stay home. They would have been horribly treated and for certainly executed.
I have to say, if those great men were alive today, I wonder if they would be honored or reviled. Because these are men who did what they thought was right for the country, not what was right for the business or the lobbyists. They did what and Franklin said there's a couple things he made mistakes on. He misread the people. Mm. The thing is, they did what they thought was best for the country. And of course, we've heard all these little rumors about Jefferson and Franklin. And, you know, these were brilliant men. And yes, they did some things that are probably not family.
Mm-hmm.
But the thing is, they were powerful men who were also powerfully flawed. But it was a combined genius. I mean, Congress was amazing. That all these great men who worked together for one cause, and many suffered for it.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
And we forget that.
That's what drives me crazy about modern day government, how they can't even agree over what subs to get. You know what I mean? And
yeah.
During Franklin's time and, you know, during the colonial era and everything, and that's why I talk about the Declaration of Independence and the U.S. Constitution being some of the greatest documents ever written in human history, because, you know, we had 13 colonies that all had 13 different needs. You know, Georgia was a penal colony. South Carolina was a business hub. You know, all these different states had different wants and needs and desires and philosophies and everything else. But somehow these gentlemen were able to come together and agree. And there is the two key words is agree and compromise. In other words, I am willing to meet you halfway on your desires if you meet me halfway on mine. I respect your opinion, though it differs from mine. And these guys were able to come together, and anybody who signed that Declaration of Independence, the amount of sack that it had to take, because if your name went on that Declaration of Independence at King George I, you pretty much just signed your own death warrant. And like I said, it's just some of the most brilliant minds of time. You know, we talk about Greek philosophy and all that kind of stuff. The colonial era, I mean, the men of respect of that time are just incredible. So, you know, if you read about them and you can't latch on to them somehow, you're just not giving it enough, you know.
Well, Franklin said, when everybody's getting ready to sign, he said, we need to hang together. Or most assuredly will hang separately.
Absolutely. Yep.
Hang them high.
He also said about democracy, where he says something to the effect, this might last 2 years, it might last 20 years, it might last 200, but sooner or later somebody's bound to mess it up. You know, I mean,
but,
and again, this is a gentleman that was speaking.
He said,
I mean,
the wife of the mayor said, Dr. Franklin, what have you gentlemen created, a monarchy or a republic? Madam, a republic, if you can keep it.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, you hear these guys were incredible. You know what I mean? It's just...
Here's an important date. March 4th, 797. You know why that's important? March 4th, 1797. You don't know why that's important, do you?
No, sure don't.
Good.
Here we go.
It's the day that George Washington said, John Adams, take this job and shove it. I ain't working here no more.
That Pence paycheck. Yes.
Yeah.
Basically, the first time a popularly elected leader voluntarily relinquished his position to a popularly elected leader. We've done something that Notre Dame said. Every four years, we have an election for president. Sometimes the good guy wins, sometimes the bad guy wins. But guess what? Every 4 years, the one says, okay, the transition of power, peaceful transition of power. Now, I don't give a damn what you talk about. You can talk about all the elections that we've had conferences over. You know, the last one, the one before, has always been a peaceful transition of power.
it doesn't happen anywhere else, you know.
Nowhere else can you say that for all those years. Yes, there are places like England where they've been transitioning to power, but it's a parliamentary system. Election can be anywhere from 1 year to 6 years. Every four friggin' years, we have
an election.
And
yeah,
I'll tell you something. I'll tell you something. During the last election, I was in Europe. I was doing some film work over there, and I visited Spain, and people still talk about General Franco, Portugal.
James Franco?
Salazar.
Oh, I'm sorry. Go ahead. I can't think of an answer. Okay.
I've been to three countries.
I got to get around.
Morocco. No, here's the thing. I've been to five countries that knew what it's like to not have freedom.
Mm.
Sometimes I wonder, do the people in this country understand what it is to be free? Because those countries over there, we talk about General Franco. They have this look on their face. They talk
mm-hmm.
about it. Some people remember the Nazis in Paris. These people have lost freedom. And we've been very blessed have not to have lost it. And when you talk to these people, I hope your country knows what they've got. And during the election, said, we love you. God bless you. We're praying for you.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, people weren't laughing at us. They were praying for us. And I'm not saying for or against anybody. I'm just saying we're viewed as a great nation.
Right.
And we're viewed as a nation that is the pillar of democracy. And
mm-hmm.
we need to make sure the people understand that. Because when you have people over there who know what it's like to have the police barging in at all hours of the night, when you know what it's like
right.
to have papers
right.
not published because of censorship, you know, I mean, Franklin said, where there is no freedom of thought, there is no wisdom.
Mm-hmm.
And
yeah,
we have
sometimes I kind of like to think we're a bit spoiled, too, you know, when it comes down to our freedom, how we take it for granted, when you say the word freedom, it's not just the right to vote or carry a firearm. When I say freedom, it's going out and buying a car. It's buying whatever kind of soap you want to use. It's, you know,
mm-hmm.
you know, taking your wife to a restaurant. It's taking a vacation.
Every state, travel across country if you want to.
Right.
You know, I mean.
And a lot of other countries just don't have the same.
Not a Republican,
they don't have
a Democrat
the same ability.
As Americans. Yeah. Because. Yeah, I get very frustrated I'd rather have a free press that's flawed than no press.
Mm.
Yeah, makes a good point.
Mm-hmm.
The thing is, first of all, when I get my news, I don't go to one state. I go to a whole bunch of these ones because they all have a bias. I'm
right.
a solid journalist. And yes, I had, and one of the things I prided myself, I edited a weekly newspaper for about 2 years. And I prided myself, I wouldn't get, I tried to avoid getting two sides, but I tried to get two sides of the story. I tried to get all sides.
Right.
Because there's two extreme sides, and there's a side in the middle saying, okay, what the hell's going on?
Right, and you have the ability to develop your own opinion instead of adopting what you've heard as yours. You're able to formulate your own.
There was one person who frankly, one of the local politicians, who I couldn't stand. It was I just didn't like him. Period, and the feeling was mutual. And
mm-hmm.
I got this information about something he was doing wrong, and I'm going good, yes. Well,
right.
I followed my And the thing is, I started checking out, and I'm thinking, I know he did it, but I have no proof. And I said, and I told the person who gave me the source, I can't give a story. Why not? All it seems like you can't stand you can't stand him.
Hmm.
Personal hatred is not a story. I can't prove he did anything wrong. Do I think he did? Yes, but guess what? If I can't prove it, I'm not going to publish it. And there's one guy who I can't, and I told the guy, you know, said, there's no story.
I do that playing Clue sometimes. I play the game Clue. Yeah.
Actually, one thing, I did something else, which I've been criticized for, but I don't feel I should be criticized, but I did anyway. When I wrote a story, when I could, I talked to the people who I was quoting and make sure I had the quote correct. I relayed the paragraph above and below and the paragraph with their quote. So I want to make sure I was putting the context in correct, because sometimes you can say things and out of context it sounds terrible, but in context it sounds, makes plenty of sense. And we've seen it happen, you know, all this politics, and whether Democrats or Republicans, they find somebody say something, they draw out of context, it goes ridiculous. So I called a guy up and said, he said, yeah, I said that. I didn't mean it. Mm. I said, okay, what the hell did you mean then? I said, I've got 5 minutes. Tell me what the hell you mean. I said, fine, that's the quote I'll use. So I gave him the quote he wanted to use, because I did not want to misrepresent him. I mean, we spend so much time misquoting people. Look, the president makes statements all the time. And Trump would say something stupid, not intentionally, but just say something that comes off crazy. And put it, well, see? Or the one I like is Obama, 57 states. Well, obviously he didn't mean that. It was a misstatement. But they harbor on a misstatement rather than the character of the president. So the guy said something stupid. Hey, guess what, gang? We all do it. We've all done it. Said things we didn't mean. And we got blasted for it. And you're like, I didn't mean it that way. I'm sorry.
It almost reaches a childish level when it comes down to the finger pointing and nitpicking. And Yahoo had a banner headline on their homepage that said, Trump pulls out of Iran deal, price of oil soars. Okay, so to the less than functional being, they read that and they don't read the rest of it. And most importantly, they don't develop their own opinion. So I didn't even read the article. I just read the headlines, gave a slight chuckle, because any dealings with Iran, I'm sorry, man, I don't care what side of the aisle you're on, they're Lex Luthor. We just don't talk to those guys unless it's with a hammer in our hands. You know, that there are certain places on this planet that just don't want to play nice. They're like that one little freckle-faced, red-haired kid in the sandbox. Every time he got in there, he'd throw sand in somebody's face. He didn't care if it was the little girl or the big kid or the ugly kid or whatever. He was going to just act like a knucklehead every time he got in that sand. Right. That's what Iran is. So it said the price of oil soars. So this morning I made a point, as I'm driving to work, to take a look at the price of gas, because we've all seen of late, if the emir farts at a presidential dinner, the price of gas will go up 27 cents in a day. We've all seen it.
Mm-hmm.
Okay?
Mm-hmm.
The gas went up a robust 6 cents in 2 days.
Yeah.
Okay? 6 cents. So how is that soaring? So basically what Yahoo was trying to do is villainize, try to find something, at least something, the fact that Trump got away from this horrible deal with Iran. I compare giving any type of nuclear knowledge to Iran is like Superman handing Lex Luthor kryptonite. Why would we do that? You know? And he got out of a horrible deal. And how are we going to villainize the guy, you know?
Yeah. Well, see, here's the problem. And it's very, very predictable. when Obama was president, CNN couldn't praise him enough, and Fox News couldn't vilify him enough.
Right.
Then all of a sudden, we got Trump. And Fox News, Trump didn't do anything whatsoever, and he's praised like crazy. CNN is like, you know, like, there's no way I can praise. You know, basically, CNN is always going to be critical. Fox will be pro. And I'm thinking, no, we should have a – I mean, I remember people like Walter Cronkite, Howard K. Smith, Huntley and Brinkley. You know, people that gave us the news, gave us the facts, gave us the information, and let us make our decision.
Right.
And commentary was clear.
I mean, you remember Frank Reynolds.
Oh, God.
You know, didn't he cry at the Kennedy assassination? I mean, he cried on the air. You know, I mean, it's that kind of stuff right there.
Frank Reynolds did something he was criticized for, and when I watched it, I was like, that was when Reagan got shot. And Brady said, that means Brady's dead. Wait, what? He's still alive. Damn it! Get these facts straight. Don't put me. And he just screamed at his editor, saying, "Get the facts straight. I got to give the people the truth." And I'm thinking, that's the kind of person
you
want.
That's what it's all about. Yeah, yeah. But
I mean,
that's when there wasn't a tilt to the playing field. You know what I mean? Those guys were out there telling us the news. You know,
and you never knew how they voted because trying to give it fair and totally unbiased. I mean, that's when I was a reporter. That's how I used to do. And I remember the old Johnny Carson thing. I had friends who worked for him. He said the rule was so many pro. Anti-Republican jokes, so many anti-Democrat jokes. He said he never wanted to have it all critical of the president, he wanted to have it fair and balanced. But he says because politics is funny, and he tried to keep it. Here's a good story for you. Do you know who Gilbert Stuart is, the painter? Okay, he had a cottage industry. Painting George Washington. And Gilbert Stuart, being an artist, he was kind of flaky. And George Washington was known for not, let's put it this way, he did not have a great sense of humor.
Nah, he was no nonsense. Yeah.
And so one time, so Gilbert Stuart was painting George Washington again. And so Gilbert has several scantily clad young ladies come into the studio. Oh, you're saying George Washington. Oh, blah, blah, blah. You know, the ladies scantily dressed.
Oh,
and
yeah, just like the Godfather and his train. Yeah, okay, go ahead.
Right. So anyway, finally, Gilbert Stuart, out of frustration, "General, I've been paying you for many years. I think we can call ourselves friends. You call me Gil, and I'll call you George."
And you call me out. I love it.
And General Washington said,
great.
"Let's not."
Oh, wow. Shut that down,
yeah.
Dude.
Shut that down, yeah.
You tell him.
There was a story that I read about Washington, though, and I always thought George Washington, he was another one that he's up there with Jefferson on my list when it comes down to guys you could really take a lesson from. If you dig a little, not just the regular stories you read, oh, he's the first president of the United States, blah, yeah, we know that. But if you dig down and get into some nuts and bolts of what he did, there's a story I read that in Valley Forge, you know, and the snow's neck deep, these guys are sitting out there with no coats, no shoes, you know, everything's hibernating, so the game wasn't out there. They're rationing food. They're running from the British, you know, the whole nine yards. And Washington, morale was like an all-time low. Washington comes out of his comfortable tent in full regalia and walks around the camp and looks every man in the eye and nods.
Mm.
Now, let me tell you something. It doesn't sound like much, but could you imagine to have this guy walking out and he didn't have to shake your hand, and he didn't have to get on TV, and he didn't have to have a, you know, a medal or anything like that. This guy just looked you in the eye and nodded, and it told you he knew how cold you were. Despite him being wrapped up, he felt your pain. And that is leadership. Man, if you can't pull something out of that, you're just not trying hard enough. I mean, that's what America's all about. You know what I mean? And you read a story like that, if you don't get that cold chill on your back, I mean, wanted it worse than King George did, you know?
Right.
But, of course, nowadays, you know, it's all about the Kardashian mindset. Gimme, gimme, gimme. All about me. I'm not wanting to sacrifice anything for what I want. I want big muscles, but I don't want to go to the gym. And, you know, and it's sickening because I think about the sacrifices that these great men made. And there are people in this country that are just, you know, for lack of a better term, pissing all over it. And it's aggravating sometimes just to see it.
Well, yeah. I mean, they wouldn't be having things given to you. And this country wasn't given to us. We had to fight for it. And, again, we're going to lose our freedoms because we're too damn stupid.
Right.
Because we don't understand. I mean, we look at different countries and say, oh, look, and don't understand the reason behind the country. Like, you know, we blast France for things. Well, France has a common border with Germany, so it's kind of hard to withstand a German onslaught when, it's like Canada trying to invade the United States. If Canada went and invaded and all their troops, they would do a pretty good job because it's, there's no border there. There's just, you know, and the French are very proud people. And, you know, the thing is, like, when they were occupied, a lot of people fought the French resistance. And without that French resistance, it would have been hard for us to invade and capture Europe again. Because they had all the spies and everything. And that's, you know, here's the thing. When I was in Belgium back in the early 70s, and, you know, my little naive thing, everybody was in the resistance and all that. And I said, and I asked this guy, he brought me, I met his father. So I said, and, you know, he'd lived there all of his life. And I said, how was it? Were you part of the resistance? No, I was not. What was it like when the Nazis were here? If you didn't bother them, they didn't bother you. End of discussion.
Oh, wow.
And so, realizing, you know, when you're, you know, it's very easy to say, well, I would do this, I would do that. But when you're afraid of dying, sometimes you make different decisions.
Right.
You know, it is that I would do that if I had that. How do you know? I mean, I lived in Northern Ireland for 2 years at the height of the thing called the Troubles. Sounds like a female problem, doesn't it? But it wasn't. It was. And, you know, when somebody points a gun at you, I was working at a gas station. Guy pointed a gun to rob a station. I obviously survived. It was right, but, like, you know, why didn't you do that? I said, I would have done that. I said, no, you don't. When you're in the conference, or my apartment got blown up in Northern Ireland. And,
wow.
And it was there called Bloody Friday. 19 bombs went off in an hour, and I was in the middle of it. And when the bomb went off, here's the thing. I have a, maybe next time I'll play the audio tape. I'm evacuated from my flat, told to get out as a bomb, and I'm waiting there, and this fellow journalist is talking to me. I said, how long have you been here? What happened? It's a regular conversation, and I say, well, I have a flat. Well, at the moment, and I was going to say the word moment. In the middle of the word moment, the bomb went off.
Mm.
And this is middle of July. So what did I start doing? Singing Christmas carols. Now, that didn't make no sense to anybody, but I had a couple of people singing Christmas carols with me. And we were laughing. I mean, there's somebody walked by and said, is this your flat? And a police officer said, was. We're making jokes.
There wasn't much left. Yeah.
And the thing is, people, how can you laugh? I go, I cry. And there were people crying, but the thing was, when you're confronted with a situation, you do what helps you survive. In The Sound of Music, for those of you who've seen the stage show, there's a character called Max. He's a survivor. He'll whatever way the wind blows, he'll take care of it because that's how he survives. And then you have other people who are brave, who like the Von Trapps, who escape to have a better life. But courage is not something that you say I have. Courage is something that you do.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not planned. It's either it's spontaneously done or not done at all. You know, you either react or you take the apathetic road and you hope either somebody else handles it or you just hope that it will better itself on, you know, just through its own ways. But, you know, I've often wondered, you know, nowadays the United States, if the United States was ever invaded by whoever, I can care less, whoever you want, you know, lay down any country or creed or religion. If they invaded, if the same force, whoever they might be, was to invade, say, Oregon versus the Carolinas,
right?
What the reaction, you know, how much more resistance, how much easier would it be for this enemy force to infiltrate and get a foothold versus, you know, and yeah, I say it all the time at work that I'm one of the good guys. If I'm able to formulate this bad guy plan as a good guy, what are the real bad guys thinking? You know what I mean? It's a whole different level of bad guy thinking when it comes down to the actual people who want to, you know, do us harm. So, you know, in the event that they go and say, go through Washington, the Pacific Northwest, where everybody's touchy-feely and, you know, we got to love everybody and nobody has any harm and nobody has a mean bone in their body, that's bull.
Again, a valid point. And sometimes you find out that the gentlest people, the ones you think are going to be wild, pushover, the other ones are going to fight like hell.
Right.
And some of the ones who are the saber rattlers, they're like, I got 15,000 guns here. They won't bother me. They go, oh, I'll give up.
Yeah.
You know,
be the first one to throw in the towel.
You don't know because, like, again, it's easy to say, oh, I will do this. I will. But when somebody's walking through your door with a gun, hands go up very quickly.
Hands up.
I can say, oh, no.
Yeah, no problem, right?
And I've done some things like that. I look back and went, I could have gotten killed doing that. That was friggin' stupid. I could have gotten killed, but I survived. But sometimes bravery is also foolhardy, but you say, I wasn't foolish, I was brave.
Sometimes it's almost like coaching football. If the play's a success, that was the greatest coaching move in all of football history. If the play didn't go through, what the hell was he calling that play for?
Precisely. Last summer I directed a musical called Fiorello. You've never heard of it, I know. It won the 1960 Pulitzer Prize. It's the best for best play. It was a musical. About Fiorello Etchegaray. And LaGuardia was very odd. First of all, he started the attacked Tammany Hall.
Mm-hmm.
And helped to get rid of them. He was an honest politician. He was a Republican.
Mm-hmm.
He did something really weird. He was voted to Congress in 1916. He voted to go to war. And he also voted for the Draft Act. Everybody be drafted. And basically, someone said to him, okay, really? You think all these poor people should be drafted in the Army? Well, everybody needs an investment in America. What happened? Well, how would you do if not just people, but actually Congress had to go? He goes, oh, I've solved that problem. Oh, what? I've resigned my commission, my seat. I'm going to war.
Mm-hmm.
He flew in Italy, in Europe. Not only did he vote to go to war, he actually went to war. How many of the politicians nowadays say, oh, thank you for sending your child to war? I'm not sending my child to war because my child doesn't have to go to war, but your child, thank you. I mean, same thing about McCain, Sarah Palin, Joe Biden, whether you like them or not, all three had kids in the sandbox. All three had kids in the sandbox. How many other politicians can say that?
That's true.
See, I don't view myself as a Republican or a Democrat. I view myself as an American, and there are certain things that I have our liberal views, some are conservative views, and I think that I'm old enough to remember Republicans that were liberal. Mac Mathias from the state of Maryland is a liberal Republican. I met Barry Goldwater. I mean, I go back that far.
Right.
I knew the same side on
the Democrats. I mean, you look at Strom Thurmond and those guys, Lyndon Johnson. I mean, people think that, that Trump's bad news, man. You go back on Lyndon Johnson, you want to talk about crude. I mean, this guy, if you weren't a horse-riding white guy, I mean, women he didn't look the same at, any type of minority or any, I mean, and this guy was a diehard Democrat. And
here's a good story about Lyndon Johnson. One time, he tried to get talk with Barry Goldwater. Barry Goldwater, he was a character. I met him, so he's a funny guy. And so what happened was one time, he invited Barry Goldwater to the presidential pool, where nobody wears swimwear in the presidential pool. So Johnson starts swimming nude. And Barry Goldwater said, I think he's trying to intimidate me, but shit, I've seen naked people before. I'm a nudist myself.
Oh, my God. Sweet Jesus.
I know all these other stories.
Sounds like a bad scene from Eurotrip. Where they went to the nude beach and got chased down.
You guys are bad.
Yeah, I mean, it's amazing, though, how things, even now, if you look at Bill Clinton, because Lord knows I remember when Clinton was, and you got to remember, too, when Clinton was in office, we're still coming off of the Reagan administration, and for a lot of us folks that are leaning towards the conservative side on most issues, Reagan was like, you know, the second coming of, you know, Jefferson for us. It was like, okay, a rebirth. Okay, we're back in business. We're back to thinking responsibly, acting responsibly, living responsibly, blah, blah, blah. You know, he took welfare, turned it into workfare. He said, hey, look, we'll send you checks, but you're going to go on the side of the road and pick up trash. You're not just going to sit on your can and they'll send you a check. You're going to contribute to society. Be it big, small, or in between, you're going to have some type of contribution. And so when Clinton got into the White House, and all that started changing up, people were going.
They were garbage men, Emilio Estevez, working men, they were trash guys.
No, not that one. That was a little too early. But You know, yeah. I don't know how many days I beat my head up against the wall over something Clinton was doing. And I'm like, God, what is wrong with this guy? Well, 20 years later, I'm looking at him going, geez, you know, he was closer to one of the Bushes than when he was,
yeah.
You know, how Hillary is now, for God's sake. Some of the stuff that
here's the problem. I'm more concerned about who they're screwing in the bedroom than if they're screwing the country. I mean, in Europe, no one cares who's sleeping with who. They care about who's, you know, who's doing the good for the country. I mean, we seem to be obsessed.
That's right.
Obsessed.
Leave that to Ron Jeremy, for crying out loud. That's his job.
Precisely. Precisely. I mean, presidents have been sleeping around for decades.
Right.
So what?
I
care about what he's doing in Congress. I care about what he's doing with the economy. I don't care
exactly.
About it. I mean, President Clinton, they were more concerned about him doing Monroe and Lewinsky than what he was doing with the country. And he didn't do. And you take away the sexual thing, he wasn't that bad a president. In fact, if we
absolutely.
Look at most presidents, we stop. You know, well, he was about. The Republicans always criticize Clinton because he's a Democrat. And stop criticizing people because they're Republicans or Democrats. How about criticizing people because what they're doing is wrong? But
just because
like,
you have a different opinion, right?
Yes. Well, when I was in Europe, I went down and checked on my Facebook page, and I saw how many people were in favor of supporting Trump, how many people were supporting Clinton. And I found it was a pretty much even split. I'm thinking, if I could put down who I like, I'd lose all these friends.
Right.
Because you like her or you like him. How dare you? You can't be my friend. Just because you like Hillary doesn't mean you can't be my friend. Just because I like Trump, we're allowed to disagree. I have a great friend. I have a great friend. And we will talk about politics and we'll get Bill. We're not going to agree on this one. Okay. Which means let's not talk about that anymore. Because we're not going to
move
agree.
On.
I'm not going to change it. But we've got people who say they're so vehemently in favor of one person or the other. They're like, if you don't agree with me, I hate you. I'm going, God, people. You know, think about
it. Yeah, here recently, Shania Twain, country music singer, on an interview had mentioned how she agreed with Trump's policies on certain this, that, and the other. Excuse me. Well, the next apologized for it. And I'm going, wait a minute. Why do you have to apologize for having your own opinion? Where did that become? Hey, Dave, you want some of this three bean casserole? No, I'm good. I'm not real big on that kind of stuff. Well, the next thing you know, everybody's in the kitchen calling me a weenie because I didn't eat the three bean casserole. No, it's because I don't like it. You know what I mean? And it's to think that she felt that she had to apologize,
okay,
A, for her opinion, and B, stating it.
Comment,
I mean, good Lord.
On my Facebook page, I never talk politics. Because I'm an actor.
Yeah, it's not worth it.
I'm a writer. I'm a model. I do a lot of things. Like, my opinion on politics is only as concerns me. It doesn't concern you. I mean, if we want to talk about it in a good way, fine. But I am not any great opinion leader. I'm an actor. And when I hear people saying, this damn actor is this, you know, he's a liberal. I mean, let me tell you something. I got a lot of friends out in Hollywood. Anybody who thinks Hollywood is full of liberals don't know the people I know. Because people in Hollywood have one idea. Make money.
Right.
If it's going to make money, they're going to do it. If it's not going to make money, they won't do it. I mean, I, as a writer, actor, whatever, I'm asked frequently, what's my favorite genre? My favorite genre is my bank account. And if somebody asks me to write something, I mean, there are certain things I won't do. My principals won't let me do it. But But generally, someone says, will you write this script? Sure. I mean, it's called paying the bills. And
right.
Is that called selling out? I go, yeah, I'm selling out to the highest bidder. That's terrible. No, it's called show business. Not show starvation. Show business.
Yeah. Show charity.
Yeah. I mean, you do these various times. I mean, you do it because you love it, but also it's a living. If you're going to be losing money, you're not going to be doing it.
Right.
And you're very successful at what you do. At least I hope you are.
Well, found out that so many people, yeah, folks don't read the way they used to, but I mean, hey.
Oh, God, reading, yes.
Yes, that's like the ultimate stand now.
But you know, we have to work hard to make a living, and I've been kind of listening and enjoying this. You know, if we don't work hard to make a living and do what we love, where are we? We're nowhere, are we?
Right.
Yeah.
I say it all the time. You got to keep your lights on. No matter how big that dream is and no matter how bad you want it, you have to provide for your family. You have to keep the lights on. So don't let your, hey, I want to be a singer. Hey, I want to be an artist. Hey, I want to be this. Hey, I want to be that. In the meantime, you got three kids eating off the same Pop-Tart around the candlelight. That ain't getting it. And you
right.
have got to be able to provide that notion. And let me tell you, it was a pill for me to swallow to get back into the workforce after writing my books and being very successful doing so, but a bad publishing deal put me in the red. Okay, so I did nothing wrong. I did everything the way you're supposed to. I wrote it. I made sure it was right. I gave credit where credit was due, and I built a fan base, and I engaged the people who enjoyed my work. My books were selling, blah, 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 and I got taken to the cleaners by, hey, you know, it's when you work with somebody who lives halfway across the nation, it's a lot easier to get boom bamboozled than the guy who works right next to you because he knows you can still punch him in the face. When you're working with somebody who lives in a whole nother side of the world or whatever, it's hard to keep up with. Now, certainly,
yeah.
I could have fought tooth and nail, and I could have lost my house and everything else, and in the end, I could have said, well, I won. I finally got my royalty check. In the meantime, my life is a shambles. So what I had to do was say, okay, what am I going to do? And painfully, I went back to being a ham and egger. And now 90% of my life is ham and egg and 10% is my writing. But if I give up, then I've lost. You know what I mean?
Right.
But I have got, as long as I'm still pushing myself up off of that mat, getting counted out, there's still hope that I'm going to win this match. So
right.
I think many people out there, and granted, you know, you hear the stories about radio DJs sleeping in their cars, and now they're a national, you know, the Howard Sterns and these kind of guys. You know, you're right. It does happen. There are certain people, you know, what's the musician Beck, you know, dropped out of high school when he was 15 and hitchhiked across America, and now he's winning Grammys. Okay, now how many Becks do you know? One.
Right.
You know, so you know, NFL the same way. Oh, man, this guy could be the Peyton, next Peyton Manning, the next Brett Favre. Well, how many Brett Favres are there in the NFL? You know, maybe a half dozen out
right.
of all the guys, you know. So you've got
well,
to
you know,
be
you
able.
Know, Dave, I'm going to interrupt you because I think I've got a point that's very relevant. You are right that there are very few people at the top of the charts. And
right.
and Bill, I think you know that too because you're in the entertainment business. And again, it's wonderful that I got to meet you the way I did. And I heard you talk last night on our board meeting about, you know, this is what I'm doing. I've got this script.
then all of a sudden you've got people engaged about wanting to read your script and everything and see what you're doing. However, you got to keep on going because it takes, okay, we are in 2018. And in 2019, the people that are going to be at the top of the charts, some of them may not have been discovered. And so what I'll say is this, is that for those of us that are still working and trying to get there, keep doing it. Now, we got to keep the lights on. Dave is right. Dave, you're 100% right. But, Bill, I know you've got a long history of being an actor. And am I correct?
Yes.
And you got to keep at it because the minute you stop, you'll never get to the top.
Hey, you can't forget why you do that, guys.
Right.
That's right.
What's going on?
Honestly, just for the record, this is Todd. I'm going to throw this out there. I do a mantra every day, pretty much when I'm dealing with stuff, and it is, I say my wife, my son, my daughter's name, and in fact, I add my daughter's cat to it. It's why we do it. I do it for them. I don't do my stuff for me. I do it for them. Oh, and that's my perspective.
And then frankly, quote, your talents for use, they were made. What is a sundial in the shade?
Yeah.
If you don't use your talents, Franklin basically said, Franklin created all these inventions, and he's basically said, God gave me the knowledge to create these inventions. That's my gift from God. I give these inventions to the people without patent. That's my gift to the people.
Right.
So he never patented one item. His idea was so people could afford them, and all people could build them, because he cared about the people. And the thing is, like with me as a writer, I try to find things that interest me, and I hope interest other people. Like my current project, I'm working on. I'm writing a script about Joseph Smith. You know who Joseph Smith is?
Joseph Smith.
Yes. And what happened? We did a improv stage presentation of this about 3 or 4 years ago, and the guy playing Joseph Smith is a devout Mormon. I am not. So basically, based on his incarceration, his last hours alive before he was murdered by this mob out in Carthage, Illinois. So I'm playing the main character is the jailer, who comes and talks to Joseph Smith, saying, "Who in the heck are you? Why do people hate you?" And started asking him questions. But the thing is, I'm writing the questions. Joseph is providing the answers. So at the very end, when he's killed, we don't see him getting killed, we just hear it. But the idea is, like, I'm not trying to say Joseph Smith is wonderful, nor am I just trying to say Joseph Smith is a charlatan. The idea is that this is Joseph Smith. You, the audience, make your opinion. And I've watched Mormon films by Joseph Smith, and I've watched films who hate Joseph Smith. And I'm thinking, who the hell is he? The one side's like, he's terrible, he's evil. No one says, like, you know, he's the greatest thing since sliced bread and walking on water. And I'm thinking, why does man create such a fervor? So I wanted to do a film, which we've seen is being interrogated, and answer the questions. So some questions I've asked, I'm thinking, I've had anybody ask before. So to me, this is the kind of films I want to do. I want to create films and make people think. The challenge is the thing. I'm saying, this is the opinion you need to make. You know, the opinion is you need to, as we said before, make your own opinion, not depend on some Republican or some Democrat saying you need to think this way, and if you don't think this way, you're evil.
Get educated, make a sound decision, not based on emotions. But I mean, Todd will attest, I talk about two decisions you make in your life. Those are business decisions and emotional decisions. And, you know, you've got to have that ability to pull that color out of it of emotion and make black and white decisions. And whatever you do, when you go to make these moves, educate yourself. Thoroughly think it through. Follow through on your decision, you know?
Another Franklin quote, we are all born ignorant, but it takes a lot of effort to remain stupid.
Well, that's true. All right.
We had a couple of them at work today, so.
yeah.
No,
I've proven that correct.
Just for the record, can I slide something in here real quick? I heard a lot of the word make tonight. In reference to decisions, I am of the mind that you take a decision because it is there. You are not making anything. Any input?
That's a valid point.
Yeah, that's true. But I mean,
take the information. You take the information and carry it.
Because
you
have your choice. You can walk into the wall in front of you. You can turn left. You can turn right. You can stand still, or you can go back. That's just kind of the way it is. You're taking.
Right.
It's there. You're not making a damn thing.
Yeah.
You're taking a decision with you. You're picking it up like a football and saying, I'm carrying it.
Right. And you've got to be
I know John was going
to
somewhere.
The other side.
I know John had a point to make, and I overran it. Sorry, John.
No. Fine. No, I just wanted to say something, but I'll tell you what. I do have another point to make, and I believe this is important. I have learned I really try to be a student of life. I don't do as much research as I used to, no longer a college professor, but I learned something from our commander-in-chief. And Bill and Todd and Dave, I want you to comment on this because it's an important story for me. It's one of the most important lessons that I have learned. Donald Trump was talking with Pierre Trudeau from Canada. And Trudeau was laughing and said, you know, you have a negative balance of trade with us. Trump looked at him and said, you're wrong. You have a negative balance of trade with us. In other words, you buy more from us than we sell to you. And, you know, Trudeau argued a little bit, and Trump kept saying, you owe us money. We don't owe you anything. And Trudeau finally said, well, maybe I need to check this out. Turns out, of course, Canada buys less from us than we buy from them. But Trump got the guy. He scared him. And Trudeau went home and found out. Trump said, you have made a mistake in your numbers. And then it was like a week later. Trump laughed. He said, I had no idea what I was talking about. But I just said it because I got mad that he said that we owed him money. And it was really interesting because, you know, it's the first time I think in recorded history of, say, since 1800, that a politician, a businessman turned politician, has simply bluffed his way into a positive statement. Now, Bill, when you talk about Benjamin Franklin.
Yes, he bluffed his way a lot.
Did he... You know, can you comment to that? Did Franklin ever use his power of persuasion? And I think he did. Did he ever use his power of persuasion to put our country in a better light? Can you please comment? I'm sorry, I love this little argument, and now that I've got a Franklin scholar, I want to ask. Talk, please, sir.
Yeah, run with it, dude.
Basically, he was in a situation that the King of France did not want to help us for valid reasons. He did not. The King of France did not want to give money to a colony to escape another king, because it was out of precedent. I think Franklin used his power of persuasion, used his power of delighting of being an icon. I mean, when he came to France in 1776, he was feted like a superstar. I mean, he had parades. Like one line, like, I've had, writing to his daughter, I was given parades. My picture is everywhere on paintings, pottery, snuff boxes. Your father's face is well known as the man in the moon. And he used that status to sell the aristocracy on his supporters. And the thing is, if anybody can say that it was one of the fathers of the French Revolution, Ben Franklin needs to be there. Because he bankrupted the country of France to support us. And the people said, wait a minute, Franklin is here for freedom. Shouldn't we have freedom too? And that's what started the French Revolution. The people were saying, Franklin, and Franklin was very, he knew how to manipulate. He knew how to change opinions. John Adams. Let me tell you some really good words about John Adams. Anyway, John Adams once said to him, early to bed, early to rise, make them healthy, wealthy, and wise. You say that in your almanac, yet you stay up all night in the French salons. And Franklin responded, Mr. Adams, I can do more in the French salons after midnight than you can in the hall of the government at 8 o'clock in the morning. Because he knew that diplomacy isn't an 8-to-4 job. He knew diplomacy doesn't mean impress the president or impress the king. It means impress the people who are under the king, who can influence the king. Now, Franklin was loved by the peasants and by the aristocracy. Although the women adored him because he was a gentle, kind person, and they loved him because he also knew that one of his favorite lines is, three can keep a secret if two are dead. Think about that, gentlemen.
Yeah.
But and the thing is, Franklin, there's rumors about what he did, but he knows there were two types of women, those who talk and those who did not. Those who do not are more popular. And he knew that not documenting certain things was advantageous. People think, well, he didn't write it down. Well, why should he write that down? You know, this is going to be embarrassing to him. Why would he write it down? Yes. You know, one of Franklin's lines is, I spent many nights with some low women. Only divine intervention prevented me from getting anything detrimental. So he's honest, but he went in detail. But bluffing. I mean, he did things with the almanac against his competitors. And some of the dirty politics, but it actually just good business because it was funny. He just knew what buttons to push. I mean,
right.
When you look at him, in 1742, he started the Philadelphia Academy, which became the University of Pennsylvania. All right, fine. In 1751, he helped start the first hospital. has a great story about him getting the first matching grant. Legislation would not want. Well, I'll do the quick story. Dr. Thomas Bond came to me and said, "We need £4,000 for a hospital in Philadelphia. But I'm a doctor. I don't know how to raise the money." And I told him I would help him. So I went to the legislature. "Gentlemen, the legislature, we need £4,000 for a hospital here in Philadelphia." And the wise men of the legislature said, "Hospital? You city folk want a hospital. There's farmers in the countryside. They don't want no hospital." Gentlemen, the legislature, tell you what I'm going to do. Tell you what I'm going to do. If I get not one, but 2,000 farmers, they pledge £2,000 for a hospital. Will you, legislature, match that? With that £2,000, we get £4,000 for a hospital. And the kind men of the legislature said, "You're going to get £2,000 from the farmers." "Yes, Mr. Franklin. You get £2,000. We'll match it." 6 months later, I walked back in with a ledger book and a satchel. "Oh, Mr. Franklin, I see you have a book. Is that for all your wise sayings?" "Yes, some very wise sayings. May I read you some?" "Oh, yes, sir, Mr. Franklin. Amuse us, please." Josiah Sims, farmer, £1. Isaiah Sudden, £5. Farmer. Joseph Simpson, "I've got 2,000 farmers here, sir, and £2,000. Match it." And they did. In 1766, the University of Pennsylvania and Philadelphia Hospital, Pennsylvania Hospital met. And the university became the first medical school and a hospital, first teaching hospital. That's a legacy. That still exists.
Pretty solid.
Yeah.
Thing is, you never think know
with,
what you accomplish.
You know, speaking on Trump's thing, compared, you know, like you were saying against somebody like Franklin, you know, I totally agree with what you say. And I think a lot of times, you know, like when he was speaking to Trudeau, number one, you've got to speak with conviction. And, you know, Patton, if you ever read anything about Patton, he was a, for lack of a better term, he was a nut. But the man was brilliant, and he believed everything he said, whether he studied it or not. And he spoke
he
with
believed
conviction.
What he said, and, right. Thank you, Dave. Thank you, Dave. That's a brilliant statement to comment about him.
And, you know, he worked off it. And, you know, to be able to pull off these kind of things, I mean, let's look at what Trump's done with North Korea. 3 months ago, this guy was saying, "I'm going to go ahead and blow the United States up." Now he's wanting to share lunches with us. Trump had to have made a call and had to have done something. And the three things about people that you really want to look out for is, do they speak with conviction? Are they willing to take risks? And do they back up what they say? So, you know, I used to, you know, when I was a kid, I was always the little guy, and you go into the bathroom and the big kid goes, "Hey, well, I'm going to beat you up after school." Well, I knew I was going to get my tail whipped one way or another, because this guy was three times my size and twice my age because he couldn't pass school. I knew I was going to get beat up, but I would look him in the eye and go, "No, you're not going to do it after school. You're going to do it now." And yeah, sure, I got worked over, but I didn't get bullied by that same guy twice, because he figured out, A, I'm willing to step into it, B, I was risk, and C, I looked him right in the eye when I said it, knowing I was going to get my tail kicked, knowing the guy was going to mop the floor at my backside. And there's nothing scarier than dealing with a person that can back up what they say. When you're sitting there at that poker table, and that guy across the poker table grabs a fistful of chips and errantly just throws them in the middle of the table like it doesn't mean anything, he might not have anything. But you get that wiggly little feeling in your back when he does that. Why? Because conviction, the risk, and the follow-through, you know, to back it up.
Right.
And that's where the guys, you know, and again, going back to Ben Franklin, you know, the guy was brilliant. So brilliant comes in different packages. You can have the patent brilliant, where the guy on the battlefield was just, I mean, incredible. He thought he was, you know, he thought he was a Trojan soldier and a Greek soldier. But on the battlefield, the guy was magnificent. But
really,
during peace times, he was a train wreck. He just couldn't operate when there was peace. And
kind of like Churchill, come on.
Right.
Churchill
right.
was terrible.
Yeah.
But my God, during war, he was one of the greatest leaders in history, Churchill.
Absolutely. So you look at somebody like Franklin, who was able to go out there, and yeah, well, he wasn't the guy walking around leading the armies with the big, you know, coats and everything. He wasn't the warrior. He wasn't the, you know, the guy with the, you know, gun strapped across his chest and everything.
Here's a good story about Franklin. He started the French Indian War. He created them because his Quaker belief, he wouldn't create William Penn wouldn't create a militia. Franklin created a militia. He became, I think, a colonel in the militia. And Franklin said, I shouldn't be a colonel. I have no idea what the hell I'm doing.
Exactly.
So, but he knew he was a military commander. But he knew he could organize.
But he had that ability.
Right.
Yeah, he had that ability and ran with it. And that's where the most brilliant minds, and even if you go into the criminal side of things, for crying out loud, you look at some of these guys, I mean, I can't drive around with a taillight out in my truck for more than a week to get without getting busted. You've got these guys that you know, are serial killers and never get caught or stay missing for 30 some odd years and everything. It's a horrible kind of brilliance, but it's another kind of brilliance. And
oh, yeah.
I mean,
well,
again, like I said,
if the three key
elements are there, you know.
And now, Dave, I hate to tell you this. I'm going to cut you short because we have 1.5 minutes left.
Uh-oh.
And so what I'm going to do, number one, I got two things to do tonight. Number one, thank you, Bill Pacer. There's the British lady, 90 seconds left. Bill Pacer, thank you. Will you come back and talk some more about Ben Franklin and topical politics?
Sure.
Thank you, number one. Number two, since we have we have a majority tonight of our Comic-Con stars, Dave Atwell, I would like to nominate Todd Saxon to be a member of our Comic-Con Stars crowd and join us every week and talk. Dave Atwell,
do
you accept that nomination?
Oh, yeah, certainly. It'd be great to have him aboard.
All right, well, we've now voted you in. Todd, are you on board? You're going to be a new member of the Comic-Con Stars?
God, I'd love to. I'm trying to fight tears. You know I'm going to be out of pocket for a week or two. You guys both know what's going on.
Moving, and we don't care. You're going to be with us forever. So anyway, and we got about 30 seconds left. So thank you, everybody, for Comic-Con Star. We have a new Comic-Con Stars, Papa Stro Maestro, Dave Atwell, Greg Bo Watson, and now Todd Saxon, and we're glad to have you with us.
That I'm going to throw him real quick. Bill, thank you for being here with us, and thank you for letting me participate, brother.
That's right, and we're all
my
good
pleasure.
To go. We'll talk to everybody later next week as we have one of our Hollywood stars. We're going to talk about her new movie on Lizard Man. Take care. We love all of you. See you next week on Comic-Con Stars.
All right. Happy Mom's Day, everybody.
Yeah.
Love you all, brothers.
Happy Mom's
Thanks.
Day. That's it. Not just the mothers, but the moms too, you know what I mean?